Now, John Leahy, the great John Leahy, one of our finest hurlers ever, is currently a drug education officer with the HSE Substance Misuse Service in Clonmel, and he joins me now. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fran.
And always a pleasure to talk to you. John, we got a huge response to Ciarán Carey's claims that cocaine use is very prominent in our GAA clubs. Were you shocked at that view?
Not really, Fran. You know, when you look, I suppose, the last number of years, we would see it, and I see it in my job, and I see it with the staff that I be working with, that cocaine is on the increase, you know, and the National Drug Treatment Reporting System would indicate that it's on the increase, and I wouldn't be surprised with what Ciarán has said. And I do know before the COVID, so from my own role as a drug education officer, I would have been contacted a lot about doing some education information evenings around substance use, and cocaine was very prevalent that time. And I think during the COVID, you know, we haven't seen it slacking off. So, yeah, no, not one bit surprised that Ciarán would make a statement that tis prevalent out there.
And of course, he's a psychotherapist as well as being a very fine sportsman as well. But in your role as a drug education officer, John, I know that you're out there informing people, and I think that there's more information about drug misuse than ever before, but still people are going ahead, and particularly our young people, and taking it.
That's correct, Fran. You know, and I do think a lot of it is I suppose, Fallon, that young people aren't getting enough education about the drugs, the substances that are out there. There's a lot of false information. I suppose there's not enough information there going out there from the point of view of a public health point of view. And there's a lot of myths out there. And, you know, you take cocaine. You know, the biggest problem that we see with cocaine is we don't really know what's in it. And, you know, I done training there 2 years ago, Fran. And what was frightening for me to hear that was the purity of cocaine. Any cocaine that we get in Ireland is only between 4 and 24% pure. So it's made up of a whole load of other ingredients in that point of view. So you don't really know what you're getting.
And that could be anything, I guess, could it?
That could be anything coming from aluminium, from strychnine, from, you know, powders, sugars, you name it in that point of view. And a lot of people kind of say, oh, there's rat poison in it. We must remember that it's ingredients that's in rat poison more so than rat poison itself. Because, you know, people want to stay alive as well in this context, and to sell it, the dealers and the whole lot don't want, I suppose, their customers dying. So we have to be, you know, kind of be more educated around not to have the ignorance and the myths that are there, you know, and we do need to educate people more. And, you know, the other thing with cocaine that we do know, you know, hepatitis C, and that stays alive in dry blood up to about 3 weeks. So, you know, there's a lot of blood that passes around with cocaine and that, and it's a dangerous product in that point of view. And we do find the trends now is it's keeping young people awake and alert in the night time, so they're drinking it with alcohol mostly. You know, now we do see people who are just taking cocaine alone, but when they mix it with alcohol, it creates another substance called cocaetanil, Fran, and that's making more toxicity as well in it, and it's giving the chances of a cardiac arrest and other medical problems. It's increasing all that, and yet there's, you know, people who take drugs they seem to have a kind of belief that it won't harm them, whatever that is in it. And, you know, that's one part. And the other side then is you look at, if you keep taking something long enough, your body is going to become a habit, and you're going to create a habit, and it's, that's where addiction and that comes in, and it's going to be a bigger issue.
And our psychotherapist, Joanna, she was talking about the long-term effect of it as well. It can have considerable effect long-term.
Yeah, like, and when we talk, say, from a public health point of view, depression is huge with cocaine because it's a stimulant drug, and when people take it, you get your high and your buzz, but depression comes after. It does affect the workings of the brain as well. So, you know, we all have natural dopamine and all that stuff in the brain to keep us, you know, physical activity is great to get all that work, and cocaine does the same. But what happens is your brain becomes dependent on the cocaine. And when the cocaine is taken away, then you're left with a lot of mental health issues. On top of that, too, we see a lot of people like getting in debt as well for funding their thing, and you know, that effect on families is not just the young person or the person who's buying it now is getting them problematic that way with the dealers. It's going across the board because they want to get paid, and you know, people are picking up physical harm from result of paying debts, all that stuff. Family members are being asked for to pay the debt. There's a lot of fear, a lot of worry around the place, you know, and that's what it thrives on, is that fear, that anger, all that. And there's a lot of knock-on effects of cocaine use that is kind of, you know, bear somebody come to our attention in the service that we hear about it, but in the domain people are afraid to talk about it. And I'm a huge believer with any drug use that the earlier they talk about it, the earlier it's out in the open, because it thrives on secrecy. That's what increases drug use.
When I said you were coming on, one of our listeners was on to us pretty much straight away to know, would I ask you, what would you think of the notion of testing, mandatory testing in the clubs for drugs, John? How would you stand on that?
I don't think it would be the answer to it, Fran, to be honest, because, you know, there's loads of, you know, ways of doing drug tests. We see it as well in our service. Well, we do drug testing, and you know, people can bring on false urines and all that, and it would help, because I'm a believer it would help, but it was not the answer to it. I'm a believer anything that would create a consequences for a drug user, particularly at a younger age, will help them to stop. Because what I see with the progression of somebody taking drugs, and you know, first of all, it's going on within the family, and the parents, family members don't realise it's happening, and until they do, then there's something done about it. But often enough, it's too late. So the likes of a drug test within the sporting organisations across the board would help. But you know, who take responsibility of it? The manpower? You're asking amateur people to do a professional job, which I think is unfair. You know, and that would be, you know, I suppose my answer to that, in the point of view of, you know, it wouldn't really be the final answer. We do need to get back to informing people of the public health consequences of what's going on when they take a specific drug, be it cocaine, cannabis, and even illegal drugs, the likes of alcohol and that as well. You know, we kind of turn a blind eye as a nation, I think, to the seriousness of the public health issue.
As part of your job as an education officer, it's important, I suppose, that parents would know what to look out for. But then again, if you have, you know, teenagers, they will naturally have ups and downs. They'll have, you know, they might want to talk for long periods of time. That's just the nature of being a teenager. What should they look out for, though, John, specifically, do you think?
Well, I suppose specifically, you know, toward one thing is their change in personality. And I know that can be a teenage thing, but that's one part of it. And the other thing then, if, you know, I believe that communication is so important. So when young people are talking to family and talking about what's going on in their lives, knowing their friends and all that, they, more than likely they're not using drugs. But when that stops, when young people stop telling their parents what's going on, when they change their friends, you know, there's sometimes they're not telling you about their friends. Also then, from a sport point of view, if they opt out of hobbies or sports that they enjoy doing, that's another indicator. And another indicator can be the point of view in school. You know, you know, their parent-teacher meetings and that. And I often say, you know, don't be afraid to ask the teachers, you know, who's their friends or what's going on for the young person. It's not just education. They'll see a shift. And you'll also notice that their academic, I suppose, behaviour is deteriorating as well. They're not as good as they were in school. Yeah. They're getting in trouble and that. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And it's not any one thing, friend. And I think, you know, we have a campaign at the moment. If you can, it's be safe, be sober. And, you know, that coincided, and we trying to, as a committee, trying to put out the message out there that to help parents, and what we say, you know, things that we can do to delay young people from drinking as well, and that is talk and listen to your teenager, have family rules. You know, I see families, they put in rules, but the expectation is too high of them, and then they stop them. Give simple ones, you know what I mean, in that context. And the one big thing that I always say to parents as well, at 14, 15 years of age, it's the first time to give parents a bit of leeway, or young people a bit of leeway around. Parents give the young person a bit of leeway around the teenagers going down the town or staying over. That's the time they need to be more vigilant around their whereabouts, who they're meeting, because we do know 14, second to third year summer holidays are a huge issue with young people. That's the time when they're more likely to start using drugs.
Because is that the time, John?
Yeah, because their parents are giving them a little bit of freedom. yeah. watching them. And we would always say, don't have any stayovers as well. You know what I mean?
Because you'd go so far as to say that, wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I would. And yeah. because I think parents... Some parents differ. We would have parents and they think it's okay to give their young person drink at 14 or 15. They're better off drinking at home. And that's fine in theory, but they won't always be drinking at home. And if you create a habit with a 14 or 15-year-old as a parent, oh, have your little glass of wine or bottle of beer or whatever it is, they won't always be under your guidelines. And the thing I've seen this, that there'd be often parties, 14, 15-year-olds have parties, their older brother or sister, and they're all invited. And some parents allow drink at that party. Now, if you were sending your son or daughter over to that, there's a peer pressure, but it's not that it is forced on the young person, but internally there's a peer pressure inside. If their friends are drinking, they say, if I don't drink, I won't fit
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing, and we need that, you know. It might sound hard for parents young, but they need to go out and leave, and they do. But I think drink, you know, and the legal age, you must remember, for alcohol is 18. And the longer we can delay the drinking in a young person, the better chance they have of not going down the road of having a problem with alcohol.
My only problem, as a parent myself, John, my only issue would be, if you're a little too heavy-handed, do you drive yeah. them away from you? It's a strange one, isn't it?
It's a strange one. And I suppose, I don't think, yeah, and I think that's, a parent has to make up that mind. But yeah. I'd be saying, you know where they are. You're collecting them as a parent.
Yeah.
You're giving them the freedom to go somewhere. And I think if, you know, young people do look for ways out of not drinking or taking drugs as well. My father's collecting me. Mm. My mother's collecting them. Give them an excuse that they can't drink or take drugs tonight, that you're there for them, you know, at the end of the night. They're the little things, I think, that can make a huge, huge, massive difference, friend.
You've been very open over the years about speaking about your own issues with alcohol, John, but I'm just wondering, when you compare your days to now, is it completely different? I mean, we, there seems to be more money for alcohol, there seems to be more money for drugs, it seems to be more accessible, I suppose, is what I'm
well,
saying.
Well, there's a lot of things different. And you know, when you talk about it, we have to be careful with the younger crowd coming up, because it's a different culture. But the thing today that the drinks industry has done over the last number of 20 years or so is there's more flavoured drinks out there.
Yeah.
It's sweeter,
good
it's
point,
nicer.
Yeah.
And the other point too, I think I would have grown up in the era, and my age group would have grown up in the era of drinking beers first. Mm. You went out, and at the end of the night you had a half one or a short, and that was the pattern. And we also went to pubs, and I think, you know, we went out to, not to really get drunk, went for the social aspect, have a bit of fun and the whole lot. But today, the young people now are starting to drink with shorts.
Yeah.
And just give you an example, I was at a wedding there before the COVID, and the young lad, a young chap I know, and we went in after the funeral, after the burial, and I was buying around, and I said, what do you want? He said, I'll have a vodka and a Coke, he said. Now, this is 1 o'clock in the day, and I turned to him, I said, you're not going to drink that for all day. I am, he said. I said, well, he said, I'm not here to drink beer. Now, the problem with the spirit drinking, it's the effect on the body, because it's higher alcohol content, yeah. and it's affecting the liver more. And we do see people now, and we know from a medical point of view, they're presenting with liver issues because of their alcohol at a younger age. That's happening now as well. And a lot of it is to do with that type of drinking. And, like, it's gone into that, the high alcohol content drink. And part of it, I think, is that it's easier to drink than beers now.
Of course, yeah. You know, well, I have to say, John, I enjoy a drink, but I couldn't drink with young lads. I just couldn't drink with them. I couldn't stay with them.
Yeah, no, and I think the mindset is, and I do think now with sport and with everything now, Frank,
yeah.
There's a pressure in life now today at everything. We want, you know, there's so much information out there about being, you know, in sport or academically to be high achievers. And people are giving up drink for a period of time probably. And then when they're going drinking, it's happening in the point of view of really getting very drunk, because that's their only opportunity. Whereas people before drank regularly and they had their few pints, they had one or two, they knew when to stop. But now for some reason, they're going out to get really drunk. And what's happening, and I say this to young people and talking to them, that if they're drinking on a night out, their chances of taking cannabis or cocaine or other drugs now is become more high risk, because, you know, I meet those people during the week and they're nice young people and they have no intention of taking drugs. But you put in alcohol, your mindset changes, the people around you, the culture now is becoming the norm that young people are taking drugs. So you're out. oh, here, I'll chance it tonight. And the problem with chancing any drug is if you like it, you're going to stay taking it and you're creating a habit. And, you know, and it is a big concern, and that we do need to educate young people how to, I suppose, how to drink, like, you know, and be responsible in the drinking. That's part of the campaign as well with the Be Sober, Be Safe, that try not give young people spirits or even wine because it's high alcohol content. Get them, give them the beers.
We because they'll get full, you know.
You know, and tis, and you know, it's, and you take it to us, but people have more access to money as well now, Fran, you know, and that's, you know, this money can be got. They may not necessarily have it, but money can be got now. So.
Is the genie out of the bottle, though, John? Is it going to be very hard to contain any of this?
I think, Fran, is it's hard to contain it, is right. Yeah. And I know there's a lot of aspects of it, like the treatment. I know here in our service, like, we're meeting people, say, for the treatment aspect, and they're getting the treatment, but often at times it needs to be an intervention somewhere before they get to a crisis. I do believe the earlier you can intervene, Fran, the better chance that young person or old person have a stop. And what's happening is we need to, people who are living with a drinker or somebody who's using drugs, you know, don't tolerate it. You have to learn to deal with it. You have to approach it, become open with it. You know, I do get calls constantly from family members of how to handle a situation with their son or their daughter or husband or wife, whatever it may be, drinking, and try and, you know, approach the problem. Don't leave it. It's not going to go away. And, you know, young people too with the likes of cannabis, I think, you know, there's a myth around that is only a bit of weed. But people don't realise the weed today is different than it was 20 years ago, Fran. Like, the THC is the main substance in cannabis. And it's illegal, so we don't know what else is in it. But go back in our time, Fran, if people had were smoking a bit of cannabis, there's only 4 to 6% potency of THC. Today, it's up to 16 to 20%.
Is it indeed?
So, yeah, so it's having more of an effect on the brain. And we see it now, a lot of cannabis-induced psychosis with young people presenting, because it has affected the brain. And it's nearly gone too far now with some young people, because they're after smoking regularly for 2, 3, or 4 years. And that's a hard place for a family to see their son or their daughter presenting with a cannabis-induced.
And again, the myth out there, John, and you spoke about myths before, but the myth out there is this is a harmless practice, you know.
And we also now, we are in the air with those vapes as well around, and young people are taking similar type cannabis products in those vapes as well. It's the same effect, and people don't realise, no matter what way you take it, it's going to affect your the workings and the mechanics of your brain. It's going to affect your lungs, it's going to affect your mental health. But there's something there that, you know, cannabis legally, you know, there's a case to have legalized cannabis, and there's a whole new world out there, a different world. But like the stuff that people are buying, you know, this stuff is not safe. It's not a safe product, and we don't know enough about it. And I can stand up and say that as well. I don't know enough about cannabis. What I do know, it can cause a lot of, you know, damage. And
right, because you've seen that, John.
We see it on a regular basis, and I hear from families, and my heart will go out for any family who have a young person who's taking cannabis, because it's so addictive as well. People just can't give it up for some reason. There's a justification for continuing taking it.
It's incredible. A couple of other things, if you wouldn't mind. I was looking at the research from UCC, just where sport is concerned, but seemingly fewer than a quarter of intercounty hurlers who had suspected concussion were removed from play. Now, I know there was guidelines in 2018, and I'm sure it's marginally better than it was in your day, John, but what do you make of that?
Well, you see, I suppose it's good that it's been highlighted, Fran, but you go back, you know, the role that will, I suppose, times we played in it, like injuries, you played on, you got up, get on with it, and it is good to hear now, we have more knowledge, and here we are, if you compare what we're saying, people now are more educated around, what's the word, what I'm looking for, concussion, right?
Yes.
So it's raising the issue. We need to keep saying the same thing about drugs and that. So it's a good thing in that, because I know I have no doubt, I know I played in the concussion one day in a minor Munster final. I got a bad knock on the head and I stayed on the pitch, 17 years of age. I ended up giving the night in hospital after that match.
Like. My God.
But what was it, a concussion? I got a bad knock.
I know.
So So I think, and you look at the rugby have been very, very proactive in it. And also then, like, you take the soccer now, you see that they're saying, you know, with hitting the ball, all that stuff constantly is affecting the brain. So if you do get a bad knock on the brain, it's only right. And I think, you know, we do need to protect our people. Because, and then today as well, friend, the athlete is a fitter man now. The muscles are more hardened. They're in the gym. There's a lot of strength and conditioning. So, and you can't strengthen the head, if that makes sense. You know, you can't build muscle around your head to protect you from it, where you can build it in every other part of the body.
Right, but at least we're talking about it. What did you make of the choice of Henry Shefflin for Galway, John? Were you as surprised as everybody else, or?
I was surprised, and it kind of don't fit with me, Fran.
I wouldn't imagine so.
No, because I think Henry, he's embedded in Kilkenny hurling. Yeah. He's played with all these players who have helped him achieve success on the club and success with the county, and now he's going managing against them. I just feel that, you know, it was a surprise, and I know Davey was being mentioned as the Galway manager and all of us. Now, I did hear it on Monday that Henry was in the directing, but we kind of ruled it out who was talking to, because I know that's not going to happen. But then, anyway, the word came out yesterday. So, but look, I think Galway have probably got a very good manager, a very disciplinary man. He's proven with club level. He's done well with his own club management. He's doing well with Thomastown. So look, I think knowing Henry as a player and as a man, he'll do everything right. But just doing it with Galway doesn't kind of fit, right?
It'll be interesting indeed. I always look forward to talking to you, John. Thanks so much for your time.
Brent, one thing before I go, can I just say, if anybody is out listening there that, you know, that they can contact our service, which is the HSE Substance Misuse Service, and the phone number is 052-617-7900.
Okay, and we'll have that number here as well.
Yeah, and also the link on the page for the Be Safe, Be Sober campaign. There's information on that on Facebook and on Instagram.
All right. John, look after yourself, and thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye to you now. Bye-bye. That's the great John Leahy speaking to us there.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.